Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi guys, and welcome to Adulting. This is the podcast where I try to figure out what it means to be an adult in this day and age and what affects the way that we grow up as millennial women, or just millennials. You could be a man too. And today I'm joined by Jasmine Sawyers.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Jasmine is a very good friend for a very long time, also an Olympic athlete, lawyer, musician. What other things do you want to add to that?
I'm going to retract the lawyer. I definitely have only have an undergrad degree in law.
Oh yeah, but I think that makes you a lawyer in my eyes.
Okay, you know what? I'll take it.
Yeah, I think. What other things can we add to your long list of accolades?
Aspiring presenter. I'm going to throw that in there. We've been doing a little bit of presenting recently.
So you do long jump, but you also did bobsleigh in the Winter Olympics.
Yes, in the Winter Youth Olympics in 2012. With Misha McNeil, who was still doing bobsleigh, we won a silver medal.
Amazing.
And then I moved back to just athletics, and I've been long jumping since then.
You're a really, really accomplished person. Like, in terms of health and fitness and sport, you are pretty much the top of the game that anyone could get to. Interestingly, when Jazz and I were at school together, I used to be off smoking all the time when Jazz was training, or off drinking and not doing anything. So sitting here now at the age we're at, both in an industry that maybe from the outside looks like it should have things in common, what we're kind of want to talk about today is, why is it that women are so drawn to do fitness rather than sport? And why is it that women in sport perhaps don't get as much airtime as people in my industry do? And what are the injustices in that, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one, because I think social media is where it's at, really. Because
yeah,
on TV, sport gets shown. But you think, when people that I speak to that are our kind of age, what they're aspiring to, it's definitely fitness. They look to fitness models, fitness Instagrammers, fitness bloggers for inspiration rather than sportswomen. And it's kind of, it's a question, why is that?
It's interesting as well, because we were just saying before how I would say that social media probably was at the forefront of what made us, not what made us, but what has encouraged us to stay healthy and fit. One, because of the pressure to look a certain way, but two, it was the first time that we were seeing kind of women with different bodies, women who are slightly musclier. And I think bodybuilding, or that style of training, which is what pretty much everyone does, even if you don't realize you're doing bodybuilding, that is kind of the fundamental weight training that most people are doing, hypertrophy training kind of thing. And that's really easy to translate online. And that does really well. And people are looking to people like me, who I'm literally just a personal trainer. I have no other qualifications in health and fitness, but I could reach a wider audience than Jazz. And I definitely feel like this is a huge injustice. And something we've been talking about before is the question of whether or not it's down to the fact that you are a woman of colour. I've gone straight in there.
I've gone straight for it. That is an interesting one, because even in athletics, there's a disparity between the athletes that have bigger followings and smaller followings. And some of it is to do with how active you are on social media. Some of it is to do with how good your results are. But if you looked through all the athletes that you might have heard of, generally, the white women have more followers than the black women. And I just don't know why that would be, other than the colour.
Because there's other women of colour athletes, a woman of colour that I follow on Instagram, such as AGN, who I've spoken about before with other friends, who's incredible. She's an Adidas athlete. She's beautiful, and yet her following...
She's so motivational.
Yeah, and she's amazing. She's a mum, and she's like, there's so many things about her that should make her like a go-to person to follow. And I know that there's always this feeling whenever we talk about race that it's like, oh my God, you can't just blame it on race or whatever. But in life, everything in the media and everything we see is whitewashed. So I do believe that even in the algorithm, I genuinely think that women of colour, or BAME women, find it harder to get up, because we're just used to seeing white people in every industry.
We're used to it, and it's put out there as the ideal. So I don't know if when you see a woman of colour on Instagram doing the fitness thing, it thinks, oh, well, that's actually not what I'm aspiring to.
Yeah.
What I'm aspiring to is this sort of white ideal. And so you go, well, I don't need to follow that, because that's not what's going to be motivation to me. And I've been guilty of it myself as a woman of colour.
Mm.
I follow so many more white women for motivation than people that look like me.
Going off on a tangent ever so slightly, but I'll bring it back. The Kardashians, very problematic. They, I kind of guess, are appropriating black women's bodies. If you think about it, they were kind of the very start of women wanting to get muscly. I do think they were the forerunners as well. So that big bottom, wanting big lips, that is a naturally aesthetic, a natural aesthetic of a woman of colour, isn't it? But when it's appropriated by white women or paler women, it's seen as attractive.
Well, now it's desirable.
Right. Women who are black often excel in athletics, right?
Yes, so many black women are successful in sport.
And how long have those bodies, which probably a bit like me, are muscly and look like athletic, how long have they been present and not been glorified?
We've had the big legs and the abs since sort of day one, and that wasn't a desirable thing. That was something I was teased for when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, white women will have experienced, who have been muscly since the start, will have experienced some of that, but it does make me wonder, as you're saying, sort of, is this, has it been made cool by white women?
I think when women, white women co-opt something, it takes it into the mainstream and it makes it acceptable. And it makes me wonder if, like, because it's on a white woman, people are like, oh my God, it's, and I know I'm saying this, like, probably guilty, like, even in the back of my own mind, I think that I wouldn't necessarily register a black woman who is muscly as being as like a big achievement as a white woman who is, because in your head you're like, oh well, that's just like genetic.
Yeah, I used to get that all the time. Even when, you know, I had already been training for years, it would be a case of, oh well, it's so natural, you know, it's in your genes to be muscly. And I don't, is that true? Is it there to an extent? But does that diminish my hard work?
No.
And does that mean that it's any less desirable because my skin is darker?
Yeah, and I think the other question is, why is it now? So I think that white women as well are at the forefront of the health and fitness thing online. That's just massive. There aren't that many. It's just a fact that there aren't as many women of colour influencers. Whether or not there are as many actually is wrong. There aren't that many who are succeeding with massive followings. So what I think is really interesting is that women in sport, and especially in the sport you do, I mean, it's incredible. You are an actual athlete, but this term athlete gets bandied around by brands and co-opted for people who are like me, who aren't athletes. When you see stuff like that, does that annoy you?
I don't think it doesn't annoy me. It does amuse me.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you see in bios, you see it a lot. I'm a this brand athlete. I'm a that brand athlete. And I've been tempted to kind of, sometimes I'll scroll through the page and think, maybe I'm, you know, thinking too fast here, but are you what I would think of as an athlete? What do you, one, I feel like athletes compete in my mind, and I know that bodybuilders compete, and that's a form of athleticism, but it's not,
but most of these people competing aren't in terms bodybuilders of athletics.
Most of them aren't, exactly, they go to the gym, and that's great, and people in fitness, and it's a great thing to be encouraging people to be fit and healthy, but that's a different thing to being an athlete.
Very different. And I think, so in as much as we're saying that, like, with the Kardashian stuff, and we've co-opted a body type or a body ideal, and it's been bolstered to become, like, in the public eye and fashionable, I think in the same way, weirdly, the fitness industry has almost co-opted this idea of athleticism and completely taken the light away. Because before, athletes, compared to especially other sports like rugby and football, which are obviously normally quite male dominated, they're obviously really widely celebrated. But people who work in my industry, in the fitness industry, are becoming like household names above people who are actual Olympic athletes. And I really want to know what the undertones are, or why it is that we're so much more drawn to getting invested in someone who's into fitness or getting invested in someone who's like an athlete. Is it because the fitness influencer is more palatable? Is it because they're managed to get a bigger following? Or is it some intrinsic, is it to do with being a woman and not wanting to play sport? What do you think?
I think there's an element of it where people will look at an influencer and say, that's achievable.
Right.
Or they'll say, this is a normal person who goes to the gym like I go to the gym.
Yes.
Whereas people might look at my page and say, this is an Olympic athlete. I can never do that.
Mm.
So I'm not going to aspire to that. I'm going to aspire to somebody that I think is much more like me. And I know that for some women, they don't want to compete.
Yeah.
And what I do is about competing. It's literally pinning myself up against other women saying, who is the best? And not in a kind of airy-fairy way. It's literally, who is first, second, third, who came last? And we can measure it. But in fitness and with influencers, that's not always the case. I don't know if it's that. Whereas people might find, okay, this is more relatable to me, I can do this. Or do they genuinely find it more impressive and therefore more inspirational that people go to the gym and get bodies like this, or are able to commit to the gym with a normal job? But then also, lots of influencers don't have a normal job at the same time. They're just, not just, but that's their only
I agree.
Job.
I was actually just about to say that. It's interesting you say it's more relatable. I could achieve this because what you're kind of, by proxy saying that is I'm an athlete, I might train 6 hours a day or my whole life is based around what my training I do. But some influencers out there who are fitness influencers who do have incredible bodies, they do spend all day, every day weighing out their food, training all the time, and they make it relatable because they've started off as your girl next door. But when their whole job is about looking that way, they spend their whole life trying to look that way. I've learned this firsthand. Like, you can't stay in a certain shape and without giving up everything. And I've learned that I do want to live like a normal-ish lifestyle. Prior to that, when I did compete, it was like being an athlete. I didn't go out. I didn't have fun with my friends. I didn't go to meals. I was being really careful with what I eat. To an extent, that is not the performance of an athlete, but it is the kind of lifestyle of an athlete. It's not relatable and it's not achievable by the layperson. I do think that narrative's coming through a bit more. I do think people are being more honest about how hard it is to achieve certain body types, which I don't think people were initially. But it is funny that you say, which I agree with you, people think influencers are more relatable because actually their job is, or my job to a certain extent, even though I've tried to change it so it's not, is to look a certain way to be inspirational. So it's not, in either way is relatable. But the other thing is, with athletics, obviously you have to look a certain way by proxy of needing to be a certain weight or a certain ability or whatever, but it's not focused on, it's not, you're not doing that just to make your body look like that. It's for a performance.
Exactly.
Which is a much healthier mindset, I think.
Yeah, I don't win or lose depending on how I look, and people can debate till the cows come home that I'm too big to be an athlete, I'm too small to be a long jumper, I'm too this or too that, and they have and they do on Twitter, and it's unpleasant. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the results are what matters.
Yeah.
I could look like anything. And if you look at the Olympic Games, and even in one event, so many people, there'll be such a range of bodies. Even in my event, in long jump, there's such a range of bodies. And so you can't look at that and say, one body type is best for this.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's kind of more relatable to some people, because you can go, okay, well, I can actually achieve this no matter what my body is like. You know, most of my competitors have 7+ inches on me.
Yeah.
And someone could look at that and go, okay, well, I don't need to look like this person in order to achieve this. But I don't think everyone's seeing it in that way, unless they actually want to be a long jumper. And how many people want to be a long jumper?
But I think the thing is with that is because with your athleticism, it's about the process. It's the process of the training. It's putting the hard work in. And it's getting to the ability of the end goal. With fitness on Instagram, it's about getting the end goal. And it doesn't really matter how you get there. It doesn't matter if you get there by killing yourself in the gym or by getting bum implants or whatever else that people are doing. And so I think that's so true. Like, not anyone, but you could work hard to try and become the best athlete you could be from whatever starting point you're at, because it's all about the work, hard work you put in. Whereas on Instagram, it's just that surface value of like what you look like. I know that's a blanket statement, and I hope that I'm not like that as a fitness influencer, but I mean that on the whole, if you looked at the industry, they're probably the most saturated and the most successful, I guess, influencers out there are ones who have incredible body. Do you know what I mean? But the other interesting thing you said was, it doesn't matter what you look like for how you like win in your competition.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what you look like. But you were saying that, obviously, if you're more attractive, you'll get more followers on Instagram, which means you could do better in your profession, because I guess athletics is not that much of a lucrative career.
That's it. I think a lot of people see professional athlete and assume that you're like a footballer and you just have money. And especially in a sport like athletics, it's just not like that. So many people aren't even making a living. And so you have to look outside of the actual sport to make a living. And sometimes that comes in form of sponsorship. Often it comes in the form of sponsorship. And sponsors will want you these days, if you have a lot of followers online. How do you get the followers online? You have the body, you have the look. And, you know, even we were talking about influencers and race and colour. Mm. And it's kind of the same in athletics. And even I can, in a way, reap the rewards of this, because even amongst the women of colour, it's the lighter, are the closer to white of us that do better. You know, there are athletes that are so much better than me, that are darker than me, that don't get the same attention.
Yeah.
And that's not right either.
Yeah.
I think some of us feel like there's a pressure to become influencers, because that seems to be where the money is. That seems to be how to make a living. And yes, our main goal here is to win medals, but winning medals isn't always enough to pay your bills.
Yeah. And I think the problem is, it sounds like I'm saying, or we're saying, that Instagram's a problem. The problem isn't Instagram, it's society. We were just talking about earlier how when I watch TV or when I watch a film, changing now, but mostly everyone in it was white and like British looking white, not like you could tell that they were English or American white. So when I read a book now, I was reading a book and one of the characters is black and the other one was like, you don't know what race they are. And I honestly, for the life of me, couldn't imagine. I normally, when I read, I imagine kind of like a celebrity or face that I know, and then it's kind of distorted in a way. This isn't active. This is just what my brain throws up, images of people. And when I was reading this book, I was like, I can't really think of that many like ambiguous race people to put as this person. So their face was just like blurry. And the black person, I can't think who the actor was. But that was hard. The other characters that were white, I had such definitive faces for them. And that's because when we watch things in the media or in the news and the TV, whatever, everything's so white that you start to believe that the world around you is white. Whereas if I walk out onto the street where I live, probably 20, 30% of the faces are white faces. But in the media, the representation is white, which is why on social media that translates.
Yeah, white is the norm. And so it's also what we aspire to.
Yeah.
It's what we look at and say, okay, well, this is what I should want to be. This is what I should want to be like. So I'm going to follow these people because they embody what I'm supposed to want.
Yeah.
What I'm supposed to be aiming for.
So in this, because I think we, both of us, came about to understanding racism and structural racism at a similar time. Because having been at the same school, we kind of had the same background, even though you're mixed race.
I think I've been brought up in where I've lived and the schools that I've been to have been predominantly white. I've had a very white experience, I would say. I've grown up around my mum's side of the family. My mum's white and my dad's black, for those that don't know that. And I think my experience of growing up, I would always have said, no, I've never experienced any racism. Mm. That was what I would always say. No, I've never experienced any racism at all. And then when I started to learn things, I realised, well, things that I wouldn't have put under the quotation of racism actually completely are, and it's structural. It's the security guard following me around a shop after I've been training because I'm in sports kit and I'm not white. So, she's probably going to be stealing. It's people crossing the road to avoid walking next to me. It's the smaller things. It's people bringing up my race in conversation that have nothing to do with my race.
Even me at school talking about your hair, like little micro, not necessarily, but like little microaggressions that are constantly pointing out that like you aren't the same as us. Why aren't you the same?
Yes.
And that's things. I think the microaggression thing is a massive thing that people struggle to get around because you're like, but it's not that big a thing. But
and I'm being nice. I just want to touch your hair.
Yeah, touching your hair. That's the thing. My mum loves touching people's hair, and I'm like, mum, you can't do that. But that is like treating a person like they are different. It's even if it's coming from the nicest place, it's basically going, you aren't the same as me, and I want to show you why we're different.
It's enforcing the whiteness as the norm.
Yeah.
It's, I'm normal, you're abnormal, let's talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And thing is, it can be really difficult because people that want to learn and want to understand and want to know more and expand their own knowledge about race, of course they should be able to, but it's also not on black people to have to endure that, ethnic minority people to have to endure kind of constant day to day, you're different, let me show you how different you are.
So I was talking to Florence Given, who's an amazing feminist, she's 19, she's fucking unbelievable, and we were talking about this, and I was like, every time that I understand racism a bit deeper, I realize like another problematic thing that I do, whether that's like me trying to bring up racism when it's not my place, or me centering myself as a white woman in a conversation that isn't about me. And we were basically saying how I, like, even now today we're talking about it, but we knew we were going to talk about it. It's not our place to ask black women or men or BAME anyone to explain the problems of race, because it's kind of like being a woman when a man's like, but why can't I catcall you? And you're like, well, I don't want to do your emotional labor.
It's not anyone else's duty to educate us.
No. When I did the last podcast with Shona, I had loads of women of color that I didn't know followed me, messaged me like, thank you so much for that. It was nice for you guys to speak about it. Why does it take a white woman talking about it for it to get heard? Because trust me, there are women of color talking about this.
Yeah, there are people out there. And why? Why is it that only people that look like them, not only, but largely people that look like them, are so keen to listen to them and to hear that conversation? I don't know. It's so difficult. And it goes even further. You know, even when you have black or people of color on panels and things, it tends to be mixed race people.
Yeah,
there's even, I've experienced
more palatable in best commas.
Yes, it's like, okay, well, we'll do the color thing, but just a bit.
Yeah,
you know, we're not going to go full black.
Full black.
And it's, you know, I see it amongst my friends. I see it amongst my friends that are such talented athletes. I see it amongst my competitors who don't get the same airtime as me because they're not Well, do we know it's because they're blacker than me? No, we don't know that. But it's relatively safe to assume.
Because I guess what you were saying before is when people don't understand that there's still racism in the UK, it's because you can't imagine all those little things you just said, being followed around a shop, people making comments to you. It's a lifetime's worth of prodding. It's not what I think people think racism is, which is using very derogatory words.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much more structural than that. It's kind of, it's like we discussed sort of before we started recording, like with women, how you feel sometimes there's only space for one woman in any room. It feels like there's only space for one person of colour in any room also. And once they've hit that quota, it's like, okay, tick, that's done. And that is structural racism. That isn't, it's not just opening up opportunity for everybody. That's saying, okay, we need to tick a box. What we're actually, now we can get back to the standard middle-aged white male.
And the other problem is you'll get people going, oh, but all the candidates who are better for the job were white. Now, that might be the case, but the reason that would be the case is that, like,
you have to ask yourself why these candidates are better. Is it because the white candidates are white? Is it because they worked harder? The amount of people...
It'll be
colour.
Because of privilege.
Exactly.
That's what Rennie says. That's what's the point. So everything about racism, it's not about racism. It's about white privilege. It's not about all the things people do. It's about all the things you can't do. It's all the spaces you can't access. And
it is. And I think people need to not take that personally.
Yes.
Because when people hear this, they're going to be offended.
Yes.
And say, but I'm not racist. And I just say want to say to them, well, it's not about you, actually.
It's not about
you. I'm not
you
calling you personally out. This is a structural thing.
Yeah.
That every individual has a part to play in. It's not about you being a racist person. I'm not calling any individual out here and saying this is your fault.
But we are all racist. So, like, I will happily admit that I am racist in that I might be more prejudiced about seeing a man of colour in the street walking behind me than I would be a white man. And that is off no grounding other than the fact that we've been taught that black men are dangerous. And that's like a conditioning thing.
It is a conditioning thing.
And even saying that out loud, people will be like, I can't believe you said that. I'd never think that. That's a problematic thing because, like, it's like the colorblind thing. It's like, I can't see color. The only people who can't see color are white people, because when you're white, you operate everything. No one questions you. When you're a person of color, you're constantly reminded, as Jazz has just said, that, oh, your hair's different, your skin's different. Do you do XYZ because of XYZ? Where are you from? No, where are you originally from?
Oh, that's my favourite.
Yeah. So where are your family from? London. But or wherever you're from. But that those things haven't happened to you. So when you're white, you can say, I can't see colour. But that in
because
of itself...
your colour isn't factored into your life.
Yeah, exactly. Because white, default white.
It's the norm.
Yeah. So that's quite heavy. It's hard that it's really hard to navigate that conversation without offending people.
Yeah, it's I think sometimes people will turn around and want to say, oh, well, can't we just forget about race and everybody get along? But when you look at the way that society is structured, society hasn't forgotten about race.
No.
So we can't just do that, because then it continues playing to white privilege, and that's how life will continue. So no, we can't just forget about
it. Won't be equality until you...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You could have a panel show of all black women and no one noticed that everyone on that panel is black, a black woman. Because if there was a panel of white women, I wouldn't turn on the TV and go, oh, that's weird. But if it was a whole panel of just black women, I would probably look at the title or look to see if there was a reason why it was all black women. Just being completely honest, because you don't see that. You would be like, that's really strange. Or even all black men.
Or even if there was a balance of where there was more black people than white people, you think, is this a black debate?
Yes, yes, 100%. You would.
This must be about race.
That is so ridiculous, isn't it? Until everyone in a room is a minority and there's one white man, until that is no one blinks an eye, then we haven't gone far enough yet. Because having one person in the room is just not good enough. Because also, I even do this with you, but like, you shouldn't have to be the spokesperson about racism in sport. Because you're a mixed race woman who plays sport, I bet every single time someone wants to talk about race, it's like you've done a degree on it. It's like you shouldn't have to always, just like you shouldn't always have to ask a woman, what's it like being a woman in your industry? Well, it's like being a man in my industry. I'm just doing my job. But yeah, there is...
Except there's a whole load of things that I have to deal with that the man doesn't have to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's another problem. It's like it shouldn't always have to be brought up. And if this is triggering you, and trust me, I get it, because when I first read Rennie's blog before I read her book, which was a few years ago now, I really had to sit with it for a bit and I felt fucked off because I was like, I'm not racist though. I'm not racist. And then it sunk in. I was annoyed about it. I felt really attacked. This is the honest reaction. Like
especially when you're somebody that may pride yourself on being, no, I treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
You know, there's sometimes people have me at events or at panels and say, you know, isn't it great how diverse this panel is? As if they want my approval.
Mm.
And that's not my job to approve of you, and you shouldn't need to seek it. Yeah. You shouldn't be proud of yourself for including, you know, that's not...
Exactly.
You haven't won there. You're just being a decent person. That's not something you get to shout about. That's the conundrum, is that... In order to speak out about these things, it's we have to give it to the people that have the platform in order to change that. And it feels counterintuitive, but it's kind of the only way that we have to do it right now because nobody's listening to the small voice, the voices that are smaller.
Yeah, because you just can't, it doesn't go beyond the scope of like...
Where do you find them? You know, if I was trying to look for more influencers of colour, for example, I wouldn't know where to go because everyone that I follow, they all follow more white people.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same in a lot of industries. Like, it's not... Even if you were looking for this, where do you find it? So we have to put it in a place where people can find it.
Definitely. I completely agree. And back to quick, because I think we haven't talked about it enough, but with sport, I was saying to Jazz earlier, I'd absolutely love to be trained like an athlete. I think there's nothing cooler than being that physically fit and conditioned. And by proxy, automatically, you would get the body of an athlete if you were eating right and doing that training. Fuck me, it'd be so hard. Why is there not a demand? Why do you think people don't realise how amazing athletes are? Like, what is it?
I don't know. I don't know if it really does seem that unattainable. But
even just the style of training, because you don't necessarily have to do it like
to the same extent. And the
but
same
like
intensity.
Some of the moves and things you do, I like will want to copy. Like the thing we did today earlier, like step ups with the jump, like all these kind of plyometric works. I do add a few things in that are like athletic space. They're so incredible for building muscle or for doing achieving things that lots of people on Instagram is trying to achieve. But for some reason, we're really like pigeonholed or like tunnel vision to thinking that there's only one way of doing things.
I'm not sure. It's such a strange one because I'm sure athletes in so many different sports will look at fitness and go, oh, I have, well, the fitness industry, and say, I have a better way to do that. I have a better way to do the exercise and I can get you improving on it so much faster. But I don't know if people look at training and necessarily want to get better at a certain thing or if they're just going, okay, well, I know this will make my bum bigger and so I'm happy to do this. Or do people want to do an exercise that's a bit more functional and say, I'm going to get so much better at doing this exercise? Or not even necessarily that, because most of the exercise that I do isn't to get me good at that exercise, it's to get me good at long jump.
Yeah.
And, you know, people will train for a marathon, but nobody will train to do a sprint race.
Yeah.
And so, but would it be fun for people? I think it would.
I think
athletics training is so much fun. I think if I said to somebody, okay, I'm going to take a group and I'm going to train you more and your 100 meter time is going to come down by 2 seconds by the time we finish this 8-week program. Wouldn't that be fun? I don't know. Do people want that?
Cool. I think so. I do think it's changing. I think I'm being a bit cynical. I'm talking about it. And I am part of this problem. I won't deny it. And when I came in, I was like that. But even in my own journey, I would love to do that now. So I think that's so much more fun. I'd love you to train me to do 100 meters. I think we need to set it up after this podcast. I think there is a desire to do this because I think we've shifted. I think we went through a huge thing where health and fitness was literally about being shredded and then everyone's realized that's not actually healthy. And I think there is now, especially with the young generation, a real desire to actually be really healthy.
Yes, and to achieve things and to improve.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that being championed online a lot more and I like it. I like when people are celebrating the things that their bodies can do.
And I think to have good mental health, you need to exercise, but you need to exercise in a way that is about being healthy rather than about being fit. And I think they're two very mutually exclusive things because a lot of the fitness, inverted commas, influencers that you see won't be very healthy because they are doing extreme things to get to the place that they're at.
That's true. And to be honest, I have to be fair, I think there's a lot of athletes that may not be healthy because we're doing extreme things. I don't think everything that I do would be recommended. I think my knees would be shot by the time that I'm 40, maybe sooner, but I'm hoping they'll hold out till then. And I think that some athletes will go to extreme lengths, again, to get the results that they want. And it's in every industry, but I now that I've seen the shift in people wanting to improve for the sake of improving, they want to be better, not just want to look great. I don't know why that hasn't shifted into sport.
I think there needs to be, and I know you've said, I remember you saying this to me maybe like 2 years ago, you're like, I want to bridge the gap between sport and fitness online. Yes. And I think that it is happening, but I just don't know why. I think we need to platform more women in sport. I think we need to turn up to more women in sport matches. I think it's ridiculous how well sport does, especially in the UK, for men. Like, rugby matches are massive, football players are household names, and it's absolute stars, and women's sport gets put on random channels at random times.
It does. It goes all the way through, though. So men will go and watch other men play rugby, but they'll also have a rugby team that they play for at the weekend casually. How many women do you know that want to, they'll go and watch, I don't know, women's football, but they'll go for a kick around with their mates in the park. We don't do that.
We don't have posters of female athletes in our bedrooms when we're little and then try and like do, that is so true. Even at school, and this is really sad, but we went to a really sporty school and I never did any sport because I generally thought I was too fat for sport. And I don't know where I got this idea from. It was really sporty. I wasn't fat, though, but I wasn't...
You were never fat.
But I guess I wasn't skinny like the other guys. I don't know. But in my head, I was like, I can't... I'm not good enough to do sport. I was intimidated by it.
And if you were a sporty girl, that had to be your whole identity as well.
Yes.
Whereas with boys...
Yeah,
boys,
all the boys played sport.
So many,
if you were fat.
Most of the boys played sport. Yeah. And it was never, oh, well, he's a sporty guy, so we can't do other things.
You actually did everything, because you've always done everything. But
that wasn't a normal thing, right?
No, you did everything. The girl that did everything.
And yeah, and that became an identity.
Yes.
Like, ooh, she does more than, oh, ooh, she does
you
music
did
and the
everything,
sport.
Though.
I mean, yeah, maybe a little too much. Maybe wouldn't advocate for that.
That is so true. I was like, oh, I can't do sports, so I'll do drama. And then you were like in the drama singing crew or whatever. And you did, and women do get pigeonholed. Like it's, but men have been going to the gym for years as well as having a life. When women go to the gym, they're like, oh, you're a fitness.
Gym yeah. Funny.
But every man, every guy that I know started going to the gym at like 14.
Yeah, and it was very normal. I had to, at school, I had to join in with the boys' gym session.
No, there was no, for PE or for games, there was a boys' weight session. There just was not a girls' one.
I would have gotten into like weightlifting if I'd had the ability to do it when I was younger. I think this is part of the problem, is that why we don't watch women's sport is because we don't give girls, young girls, the opportunity to play it in the same way that we do boys. We don't normalise it. We kind of, I think it's getting better. Yeah. And, you know, my auntie's a PE teacher and I know that the girls and the boys play all the same sports at school.
That's
which
really
is
good.
So different to when we... And I think with athletics... it's a really interesting one because athletics is one of the only sports where I think men and women get the same sort of airtime.
Yeah.
But it's because you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You don't get to watch men's athletics. It's all on the same day. It's all happening at the same time. You watch athletics. Whereas in the sports where men and women are separate, in team sports, it's the men's sports that that are pushed forward. Whereas
so
also, look at gymnastics, that kind of happens at the same time. It's different but equal, and it's all going on there and then. You don't... Oh, I like men's gymnastics. I like women's gymnastics. No, you like gymnastics. And that's a whole other conversation. Athletics has a marketing problem. With football, if you have a favourite footballer, you can go and buy their shirt with their name on the back.
Yeah.
With athletics, if you have a favourite athlete, what do you do?
Yeah, that's so true.
So, you know, that's
you
a whole other conversation.
You can buy Jazz's pins.
Oh, you can. You can buy little long jump pins if you like. Soystudio.bigcartel.com.
That's cool. I'll put a link below. So, yeah. So, what do you think? First of all, let's go break it down. Why is it... I want to hear your opinion on, like, what are the benefits for women doing sport? Like, why should we encourage women to do sport? Because I wish I'd done sport at school. I'd never done it. I went and played netball a couple of times with the girls in school now, and I love it. And I wish that I'd had that.
Yeah.
What kind of thing would you say to women? You know, like, where do you think the merit is in it?
First of all, I think this is a really interesting question because men all, not all, but a lot of men just play sport and we never ask, why should we encourage boys to do sport?
Yeah.
We just do because we know it's good for them. And I think this is the answer we need to have, is we know it's good for us.
Yeah.
It builds, with young girls, it's about being in a team. It's about staying fit, which obviously is a positive thing. It's about being healthy. It's about having fun. Half the reason I went to athletics when I was in my early teens was because all my mates were there.
Yeah,
it's a social activity and it's a healthy social activity, and that can continue into adulthood. And you know, there's so many men that play on Sunday league football teams, and where are the Sunday league women's football teams? I'm sure they exist, but they're nothing like the men's.
That is such a good point. Men are taught, and I have to say, boys do go to the gym when they're younger to put on muscle. I know that loads of the boys in our school did that, but they play sport because it's a fun time with their friends. Girls don't start exercising until they want to lose weight. But that it was my gateway as well. The reason I got into fitness was so that I could lose weight, fundamentally. Why we program women to think that exercise has only got a merit if it's for some aesthetic gain. And I think you're right. I think that people don't want to play sport or don't... We're not conditioned as little girls. It's ungainly. It's unattractive. When we were younger, you might become muscly was probably the worst thing. I remember when I first got into training, my mum was like, you're going to be so muscly, which I am now. And she laughs. But if she'd seen what I look like now, four years ago, she would have been like, you can't look like this. Whereas now it's really normal. But even when I first got into training, a lot of people were like, what the fuck are you doing? Because I put on muscle.
It still makes it about what we look like.
Exactly.
Why are we so focused on that?
So true.
And I, you know, I'm not in schools at the moment, so I don't know if this is getting better. And I really hope that it is. But I really would love to see people who are currently 10, 11, 12 coming through and having women's sports leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I think other countries do it well. In Germany, I know... adults in general play sport.
Yes.
Women and men. And most people are a member of one or two sports clubs. How many women our age do you know that are a member of actual sports clubs and go and play games?
The only people that I know that play sports women is normally very affluent, middle-aged, middle-class women
who play tennis
at sports clubs.
Yeah.
Or go and play netball. But it's a very... And it's weird because sport should be cheap. It should be something that's made available to everyone. You don't need...
It is if you take a ball to the park and kick it about. But girls would never say,
no,
you know, do you want to meet
up for a kickabout? Why didn't we do that? That is so much fun.
It's so fun.
I honestly, I wish that we did more sport things. Like I do, I now obviously go to the gym as my form of fun, but like I do really wish as a child that I'd had that. I mean, again, I don't know because I don't go into schools, but I wonder what the PE... I mean, PE also was just very... I hated it. Why do we hate it?
Why do we used to hate PE so much? Is it because... You know, we have to put the shorts on. And I think for a lot of people, it is that. It's how I look. Like you said, you didn't want to do sport because you thought you were too fat.
And I remember I had hairy legs. This is at prep school. My mum wouldn't let me shave my legs. And I was so pissed off. They were really... I don't even shave my legs now. I can't be arsed. But back then, they were like really long hair. I remember all the boys were like, eh. And then I went on the Spanish trip and one of the girls sent me her razor and then I shaved my legs. But that put me off. Periods. I remember getting my period. We had white shorts at prep school.
Yeah.
Got my first period in a pair of white shorts.
So that's humiliating. So at least then we weren't making it particularly easy for girls.
Yeah. I just think that there's... I think actually also you should... In PE, everyone should be wearing the same stuff.
Yeah.
I think we maybe did at prep school, but I guess... I used to worry about that so much, what we were looking like. I was so conscious of my body, my legs moving when I ran. And that conditioning has had to have come from... That's not programmed within me. That must have come from magazines.
It's got to be conditioned because at some point... I know that when you're really young, all kids seem to be happy to compete against each other. Even kids that aren't that competitive will compete against each other.
Because it's just fun.
It gets to a certain age where, for a girl, that stops being cool.
Yeah.
And if you decide to take on the identity of somebody that wants to win in sport, then okay, well, that's who you are now.
Yeah.
And you're going to be out on your own with that. Because every other girl, it's cool to be bad at PE. It's cool to kind of trail at the back.
Yeah.
It's not cool to put all your effort in PE when you're sort of 13.
This was me. So I used to think I'd much rather not try because then if I fail, but I did this with everything. If I fail, then it doesn't matter because everyone's seen me being the class clown at the back, not doing it. So it doesn't matter. Whereas if I actually tried and I failed, the humiliation of that for me was like too much. But I never tried, so I never knew if I would do well. But in my head, I was like, I had no confidence within sport.
But do you think that's a female thing?
I think it is, because I think guys don't give a fuck if they lose. I think boys, obviously this isn't universally, but I would say that the grand portion of guys will put themselves forward. Like I said, we had fatter boys playing sport. No one about all the boys would encourage them. They'd be like, come on, mate, let's go play.
Yep.
Like, it would be great. Whereas girls, because it is so much about how you look, I really do think that. And like, I think I remember reading all these magazines where they'd show you all the worst summer bodies on the beach. Remember all the celebrities? Oh. And they'd be like, so-and-so's put on weight. And I honestly can, in my head, see myself imagining my legs running. Say, like, I was like 12. Of course I didn't have that. But I think I thought I'd... And even if you did, it doesn't mean anything. But I think that was a massive part of my conditioning. And I don't think that was exclusive to me. I do think other... girls feel so intimidated by entering those spaces because you just don't believe that exercise is for everyone when you're a woman.
Yeah.
When you're a man, exercise is for anyone.
That's so true. And I think I had managed to kind of get past that because I'd been in competitive sports since I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I started competing in gymnastics when I was 5 and I had decided I'd taken on that identity. And I mean, it's a bit different because I wanted to be an Olympic athlete since I was 6.
Yeah.
So slightly different. But even then, that... to a lot of people in school, that became my whole identity.
Yeah.
I was the competitive, sporty one.
But I think being competitive is a really interesting thing that you talk about as well, because I'm not very competitive and I think that's taught behaviour. I'm also worried about saying that I ever want to earn money. I'm worried about being competitive in my industry because
I know you do that.
I undervalue myself. And those are all things that I do because society's told you that to be a woman, you should be gentle, be kind, happy with your lot, be very grateful, which I am, because you should be. But and that competitive, that non-competitiveness, I actually have no... Like, if I think someone's going to do something better than me, I do. And I used to be proud of that when I was younger. And that's because that's a very feminine trait, to not be competitive.
Yeah.
That, well, no, it's not a feminine trait. It's a taught ideal. And I wish I was more competitive. Now I actually want to go out and get stuff because it's good. You should, because we're not born to have a man to look after us. You need to be competitive.
Exactly.
We're taught that men go out and get shit done. You sit at home and wait for it to...
And I think part of that feeds into what you were saying about being afraid to fail if you tried. Whereas a man, I think with... I've read this so many times about men asking for raises.
Oh my God, yes.
They don't care if they get told no. They will ask for ridiculous money for their work.
Yeah.
And just either get it sometimes or be told no and they'll just move on
otherwise,
with their
life. Otherwise, women are told you're pushy, you're bossy. And also men will apply for jobs. I think it's like with 60% like qualifications for it. Women will not apply unless they're 99.9% sure they could get that job.
Yeah.
And even then they would take it at a lower pay grade because they think that... They should be lucky,
they're
so lucky to get a job.
Been in there. And you know, this plays into all of these things.
And also when we look at that, when I say women, that is white women. It then gets worse if you're a woman of colour. So every single time we have that degradation of like the disparity between men and women, there's disparity between white men and white women, and then disparity between white men and black men. And that needs to be acknowledged, especially within feminism. We need to see
right.
that
it has to
it's not an equal fight. It's not equal. So it's not all women, because all white women are treated different from all women who aren't white. I don't know if that's the right way of saying it.
I think that does make sense to me. And it's the perfect demonstration of why feminism has to be intersectional, because you're just not solving anything if
it's
not.
Because otherwise you're still propping up those power dynamics. Deborah Francis White put it really well. She was like, the way that privilege works is the guy that at the top of the pyramid is the one that raped, pillaged and stole years ago, who's a white, heterosexual, rich, cisgendered man. So if you have anything of his quality, you have a bit of privilege. So I'm heterosexual, I'm white, I'm cisgendered. So I've got three out of however many privileges he has. If you're a black, gay, transgender man, you are at the woman rather, you are at the bottom of the pile. So he's a man, he's white, he's cisgendered, he's heterosexual.
Able-bodied.
So he's created the world so that everything in the world works. I'm saying he, imagining, but this is how it works. These are the people at the top. They made the world so everything is accessible to them. So they have all the things that they could need in the world. And it's not that they've on purpose been like, well, it kind of is, but basically if you have any of those privileges, the world will say yes to you in certain instances. So the more privileges of those you have, the more you get away with. Am I explaining that right? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It makes sense to me, because every single one of those that you don't have, you get pushed further.
Yes,
and further,
you get pushed further down. So then eventually you'll get,
because the world isn't built for you.
No, exactly. Literally, it isn't built for you. So if you ever tried, I talk about this with Henry Fraser on the podcast, but if you ever tried to get around London on a wheelchair, there's like things where you can do it for like a day to see. It will take you hours. There are barely any tube stations with disabled access. There are shopping malls that only open there, like you can borrow a wheelchair, but you can only borrow it between 11 and 3, which is making the assumption that disabled people don't work or are available at off-peak times. The world only functions for people. Disabled toilets are sometimes filled with chairs. They'll use it as a storage room, or the disabled changing room in a shop, because people, you don't see disabled people around, because the world isn't made accessible to them. It's really difficult if you can't walk or if you have some kind of disability to actually get around the world. And that is what that's a really good example to explain why colour blindness isn't a thing. I think all of us who are able-bodied can register that we don't realise when something doesn't work for someone who's disabled.
Because we've never had that.
Because we've never had it. And it's quite easy for you to go, oh, actually, yeah, I never really thought that the fact that I live... Actually, my flat's got a lift, but say you live three stories up, you didn't really think if someone couldn't get in if they're in a wheelchair. It's the same with people of colour. It's just because race has been an argument that's silenced. And it's not silenced because it's awkward to talk about race or because you shouldn't talk about it. It's because if we don't talk about it, it keeps the structures in place. It keeps white people in power, and it keeps people who aren't white, BAME people, I don't know what to say, and never know the right language around this, keeps them in their position, because if we don't talk about race, they definitely can't talk about it. Because even my friend Shona said when she brought up race on a panel, she was like, ugh, the first thought was all the white people and everyone was white there are just going to look at me and be like, oh, she's talking about race.
Yeah, you get a label straight away, and it's a sign. It's, oh, do we really have to discuss race again? And it's not an issue for you in your daily life, but yeah, it is for me.
Exactly. Wow. Okay. I think we've covered a good amount.
I think we have.
I've literally loved this conversation. Actually, I've learned quite a lot.
I think I have, you know, and I think it's a constant learning.
Yeah.
And you were saying to me once you've started, you kind of can't stop because you're constantly uncovering different things.
Because you just become really aware of it. It does. It's funny. It does make life harder, which is good.
It's difficult.
It helps. It actually, I think the more aware you get, the more it, when you become aware of your privilege, you stop using it. If that makes sense. Once you become slightly aware of the privileges that you have, you stop profiting off them as much automatically by proxy, the fact that you know they're there. Whereas when you're blind to everything, it's very easy to say yes to every job you get offered, yes to every opportunity.
It can be painful when you start to recognise
self-introspection hurts.
Just from being how you were born.
Even just being pretty. We've spoken about this before, but mm-hmm. When people think your inverse comma is pretty, how much easier life is.
People trust attractive people more.
Yeah.
People are nicer to attractive people. Somebody that has, and not even necessarily just, you know, a big facial disfigurement, somebody that is less attractive, yeah, I think will report a different experience in life. You know, I've read so much about people who either got surgery or lost a load of weight.
Yeah.
And suddenly the world treats them differently.
The world changed. I've read lots of people where they were like, I was a really fat person, like very overweight. And they were like, I thought the world was horrible and I lost weight. And she was like, people held doors open for me. I would sometimes get like discount on coffee. People smiled at me. And I was like, oh, that is my everyday. I'm not saying I'm pretty, by the way, because this is another thing people don't get. I'm saying I'm conventionally, socially acceptably look like, in westernized society, people look at my face and they're like, oh, we like that. That's a face we can accept.
Yes. I mean, a man did tell me once on the bus that I'm pretty for a coloured girl, so you know.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
And that was a lovely compliment. And he really, truly thought he was giving me a compliment. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I just think you're beautiful. Oh,
thank you. I think you're beautiful.
And your brain is beautiful too.
This is a beautiful way to wrap up, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for joining me. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you for having me.
Where can everyone find you? Everyone needs to go follow you now.
Yes, I am at Jasmine Sawyers on Twitter and on Instagram. Jasmine's with a Z and no E because my parents are difficult. And I'm Jasmine Sawyers on YouTube as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. And I will see you guys soon. Bye.
Thanks, bye.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.